Are you ready? It's Saturday morning at Yahoo Sports Radio. Welcome to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, featuring Bill Harmon and powered by Insperity.
Insperity, inspiring small business performance.
The golf doctor, Charlie Epps, is in. The man who coaches PGA stud, Angel Cabrera.
Follow the golf doctor on Twitter, @thegolf_doctor.
Doctor, the golf doctor is in on Yahoo Sports Radio right now. With Charlie Epps, here's your host from the Quick and Loan Studios of Yahoo Sports Radio. It's our very own scratch golfer, sort of.
Hey, I should have stayed home and played with myself.
John Granato.
Good Saturday morning, everybody. As the man told you, I am in Houston, Texas, at the Quick and Loan Studios, and I'm heading out to Palm Springs, where both our guys are, and both their guys are playing well. Bill Haas, the defending champ, is at 12 under. Angel Cabrera at 11 under after two rounds at the Career Builder. And let's go out there, bring in the man who puts his name on the show, Charlie Epps. Charlie, what's going on?
John, good morning. It is bright and early in sunny Forney, although there's no sun out right now because it's still dark. But it's beautiful. It's been a great week for Angel. We've had great practice. Golf courses are in great shape, and it's fun to see him get some results out of some hard work, and it's a pleasure to be on the show with you and Billy.
That's great, and just down the block, I don't know how far apart you two are, Billy Harmon is here as well. Billy, what's going on?
Everything's good, John. Charlie's right. It is nice out here, and they've had wonderful weather. The thing that you hear a lot about in this event is it's like playing in a dome.
Yeah.
Things are so perfect that the scoring conditions are perfect, and the scores are very low, as they always are out here. And it should be an exciting finish with the last Bill and Angel's situation. They're both going to play the last two rounds at the stadium course, but Charlie, it should be a pretty good finish on Sunday. There'll be some pretty tough shots that have to be hit that last nine.
You know, Bill, that is correct. Pete Dye built this golf course, 1986, I believe, and it was supposed to be one of the hardest courses ever built, and it was. But since then, a lot has changed. Number one, the golf ball. Number two, the equipment. And so a lot of these holes don't play as hard as they used to be. The 17th hole, which is called Alcatraz, the famous island par three, is really a pitching wedge, and it's a pretty big green, but still they're going to stumble. They're going to hit a few funny shots. These holes are set at funny angles. So the weekend is going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to enjoy it. But one of the neat things about this week is this is the first time that Angel Cabrera has been to the desert. He always chose not to come out here, and I kind of talked him into that. It's the right place to start the year. You got good practice, good greens. You can just get into a little rhythm. And he says, yeah, sure, okay, yeah, I got to play with a bunch of amateurs. But he's having a lot of fun. And on Wednesday we're playing, and he's actually taking pictures of the mountains. He thought they were so beautiful. I mean, the golf courses really, to the eye, are really pretty breathtaking for the most part. And combined, it's put right up against the mountains, Bill and John. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it looks beautiful on TV. I've been down there before a long time ago. Wendy and I went, and it is. It's just gorgeous. And, Bill, you've chosen to stay there every winter, so you must think it's something special over there.
Well, I've lived here. This is my home, so this is where I've raised my family. And if Charlie is down at PGA West, my home is maybe 2 miles from that complex. This is the part of the desert that I live in. But, years ago when Bill won his first tournament and would go to Kapalua, I convinced him not to play the Hawaiian Open because I didn't want him starting the first two tournaments playing in the wind. And I said, why don't you just come back here after Kapalua, come out here before Kapalua, then spend the week here during the Hawaiian Open, work on your game. And so far it's been a pretty good idea for him. He's a leading money winner at this event. He's had two wins and he's lost in a playoff. since we talked about that. So he feels very comfortable here. But he hasn't played the stadium, of course, since the tour school that he missed 11 or 12 years ago. So today will be a big day, I think, for both Angel and Bill. Don't you think, Charlie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it start off the season in the hunt, and it really sets up the rest of the year to have a real good tournament early in January. It takes the pressure off, especially for Angel. He's 46 years old. He's at the end of, you know, of a great career, but he, you know, he didn't start until he was 37. And then this is last year of his present exemption. So there's different pressures. So, yeah, it would be great to have a good weekend and start the year off right.
Absolutely. And four different courses. How the guys like that? You know, you talked about the amateurs, Charlie. You've got all kinds of different courses that you're playing as well, as opposed to playing the same course for 4 days. What do the guys say about that?
Well, in Angel's case, you know, at first he was really concerned about it. And then once he realized that, number one, he was going to play all the practice rounds in a golf cart. Number two, that he was going to play on a golf course where there was no amateurs, so it wasn't a five-hour practice round. He really got into the whole thing of just hitting balls, getting good shape. And like Billy says, when you can practice with no wind, you can get your tempo, timing, and rhythm really going early. And so he's really enjoyed it, and he really hasn't. And the other thing that they've changed is you only play with one amateur as your partner, so there's two pros and two amateurs. So it moves pretty good, and most of the guys like it, don't you think, Bill?
Yeah, I do. And I think, Charlie, that you know, one of the problems with the West Coast swing is you've got three courses to play up at Pebble, you have two courses to play in San Diego, and now three out here. So if you have a player, let's say, of the superstar status or someone like Angel, who up until this year didn't have to really worry about exemptions, it was easy for them to take these tournaments off because they didn't have to play with amateurs and so on and so forth. But I was kind of happy to hear that Angel has gotten kind of in tune with the desert out here. It's a beautiful place, and it's a very comfortable place to be. And I would imagine in the future, Angel should come out here before the season starts and do some work, because it's a great place to hang out and to play golf.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And 100%.
100%, Billy. 100%. And not only do we have that going on, though, guys, but we also got Abu Dhabi going on. And interesting leaderboard. Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, and Rory McIlroy paired the threesome on the first couple of days. And Jordan struggled a little bit. The three of them actually played pretty well and are up near the top of the leaderboard. Jordan's making a move today at 4 under. Ricky, 2 under today, 8 under for the tournament. Jordan is 7 under for the tournament. Rory, 1 under today, 9 under for the tournament. Doesn't look like they're going to get in the third round. It looks like it's getting dark over there. But very interesting to put those three together. Because of the crowds around one group, I know you want to feature a group, and I guess that's the way to go about it. Do the guys like that because of the way that the fans will trample it? Whenever Tiger was playing with somebody really good, it just seemed like that's where the entire crowd went, and it feels like that's where the entire crowd went, Charlie, in the first couple of days at Abu Dhabi.
Well, I think the guys are so, you know, intense, and they pay attention to their own game. And they can't afford to let things like that bother them, because if they do, the guys are going to go right by them. So they just accept it. They know they like to see the fans out there because, you know, that's good for the game. But personally, I think they all kind of get into their own game. And I know the three stars, they enjoy it. They're a bunch of entertainers, and they like having people out there enjoying what they're doing. And so I think it's all positive all the way around.
Bill?
Well, I think as the tournament sponsor, all three of them were paid probably a hefty appearance fee. So they're the tournament themselves, which I would agree with, wants as much attention as possible as they can get. And the way to do that is to put those three together. But I also understand your point, John, of putting the three superstars in one group and kind of not having the gallery watch anybody else. But I'm sure in those events where the appearance fees are allowed, that they're doing as much as they can to bring attention to their tournament. And that's a heck of a way to do it, to pair those three together. I'm not looking at the monitor. How is the young amateur doing, DeChambeau?
He's fallen off just a hair, fallen off a hair. We'll talk about that on the other side. We got a break here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity, Inspiring Business Performance.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, featuring Bill Harmon on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com. Powered by Insperity. Insperity, inspiring small business performance. Once again with the Golf Doctor, here's your host, John Granato.
Yeah, Mississippi Queen, baby. Nice. Way to go, Plotkin. Well, Philpott's his real name. Philpott, our producer, for a few years now, pushing the buttons and getting it done every week right here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. All right, Charlie and Billy are in Palm Springs for the big tour event, the Career Builder. And you can play if you want to be competitive. InternationalProAm.com, InternationalProAm.com. Charlie, just a lot of fun, but a great competitive event.
Yes, sir, John. It's a wonderful event, which is held every year in the first week in December in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Billy Sitton and his crew, his beautiful wife, put on a great event that hosts almost 800 people at the Casa Magna Marriott, which is located right there on the beautiful bay in Puerto Vallarta. Everything is very well run. Everything is safe. The food is excellent. The golf courses are good. They're getting better. But, yes, it's great competition. There's four amateurs and a professional. You play two best balls of the fivesome. You have a lot of competition, a lot of fun, make a lot of birdies. And most importantly is, we all work very hard all year long. And if you want a great place to take a vacation and have fun, you've got parties and you have golf and perfect weather. Log on to PuertoVallartaProAm.com. Get the information, and I'll see you there in December.
All right. What stands out for you this week, guys? And there's a few things that are going on around the world of golf. Of course, the Pro Tour is in Palm Springs. The European Tour is in Abu Dhabi and having a great time, while the Champions Tour is at the Mitsubishi Electric Championship in Hawaii. For me, seeing Bryson DeChambeau at the top of the leaderboard in Abu Dhabi, staying up there and just cooled off here recently. He's at 7-under now. But how about this guy, guys? We're going to be talking about him in the future. He wins the NCAA individual, and he wins the U.S. amateur in the same year, only the fifth golfer to ever do that. Ryan Moore was the last one. Tiger Woods did it. So you know you got to be pretty darn good to get that job done. This guy looks like he's got a bright future, guys, out of SMU. Billy?
Well, and he also finished second in the Australian Masters, I believe. And he's, the uniqueness of him is he's all of his irons are the same length. I guess he's a big advocate of the golfing machine, which is kind of a physics book about golf. He was a physics major. They say he's a very, very bright young man, very different, not bad, just different. And a lot of people think he's going to change the way we view golf, and that he might be some kind of trendsetter. Some of his comments and his quotes are quite interesting. Says he's a scientist, doesn't feel emotion. I was talking to a kid that played on the team with him recently and said he's watched him hit balls. At times he could go an hour and never hit a drive. It wasn't exactly the same. 50 in a row looking exactly the same. Like you said, John, he must be pretty good to have these credentials at age 22. But I still think the most important thing he's done is finishing second in the Australian Masters. His game obviously translates to professional golf. So I'd be very, very interested to follow him. I'm really looking forward to seeing him at the Masters.
Yeah.
The comment that he made, he's taken the emotion out of the game because he approaches it with a scientific viewpoint, which is very interesting. And he's a golfing savant. I mean, he he can do things. He kind of reminds me of the great Canadian Mo Norman when he can sit there and hit, you know, 50 minutes of drives, and they're all the same. Mo was that same way. So it will I'm looking forward to see how he progresses through the ranks, and his pedigree right now is very, very nice. You win those major amateur events, you have the pedigree to go on to further professional golf. And the one thing that you know, watching out here is and we haven't even mentioned his name, is Phil Mickelson. And Phil is you know, under a lot of pressure because he's coming off of a bad year, approaching, you know, the game from a different angle. He has a new instructor. I was watching him hit yesterday. He looks good. He had a pair of very ugly pants on. But other than that, I think Phil has a lot to look forward to this year.
Well, absolutely. That'll be something to watch this year. Phil has a big year. That'll be a lot of fun at his age. Billy, what's one thing that stands out for you this week?
Well, I think Charlie mentioned, I like the talk about Phil and his new swing. I thought he was hitting the ball very good at the President's Cup, and he'd already been working with his new instructor, I believe, at that point. Jason Duffner, who was coming off kind of an indifferent year last year, I guess has gone through a divorce, got a very, very good swing. It's good to see him up there because I think he's a marvelous ball striker. So I think, I believe this, in the bottom of my heart, I think Phil Mickelson will be the first golfer to win a major in his 50s because he's still got length, he still has great imagination around the greens, and more importantly, he still has love and passion for the game. So the history of the game tells us that the people that swing longer, longer swings last longer, shorter swings don't seem to last as long, so... I think Phil is built for the duration. I'd be very, very surprised if he doesn't win this year and contend in major championships. He just loves it too much. He doesn't play with fear. He plays with love.
Speaking of winning at an older age, look who's up near the top of the leaderboard in the senior in the Champions Tour. Tom Watson at 10 under. He's 66 years old now. Duffy Waldorf is leading at 12 under. Tom Lehman at 11. Davis Love III at 11, along with Tom Pernice Jr. at 11. And then Tom Watson at 10. This dude, he is so unbelievable. He competed for an Open Championship at what, 62?
59.
Yeah. Boy, it's 7 years ago now. He competed for an Open Championship at the age of 59. If he's winning out there at 66, how good is that?
Well, like Bill says, Tom has always had a very long swing, and he's been able to, you know, stand the test of time. And one of the interesting things that he's doing this week is he's playing with a golf ball that has a different color configuration. It's got some dots on it. It looks like a soccer ball, and it's based on focusing on something different other than just maybe the stroke. I heard a story this past year about Payne Stewart. When he putted, he never looked at the golf ball. He looked at a spot about 6 inches in front to the right of his ball. So different ways to focus to help settle the nerves. Jordan Spieth looks at the hole when he putts his short putts. So Watson is always finding a way to kind of continue his play. He loves the game, and I admire him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just tremendous. If he were to win again, Billy, even on the Champions Tour at this age?
Oh, I think it'd be fantastic. It'd be great for the Champions Tour also.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're at the bottom of the hour. It's halfway point. Still a lot to talk about. Those guys are out there in the middle of it. Their guys are contending this week at the Career Builder. So we'll talk about that and more here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, featuring Bill Harmon on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com. Powered by Insperity. Insperity, inspiring small business performance. Once again, with the Golf Doctor, here's your host, John Granato.
All right. second half action here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. Brought to you by Insperity Inspiring Business Performance and the Southern Texas PGA, Charlie.
Yes, sir, John. This year is the 100th anniversary, the centennial celebration of the PGA of America. It was formed back in 1916, excuse me. It's 2016, by some golf professionals that had the foresight to put together an organization to help guys like me and put together an organization where we have great education, we support each other, and the Southern Texas PGA is a great example of that. We're about 1,000 strong all the way through, you know, from Houston over to San Antonio down into the valley, and all the guys and girls are promoting the game of golf, trying to grow the game, trying to help everybody get into the game of golf, get their kids involved, have a sport that you can play for a lifetime, just like Jack Nicklaus. He's celebrating his 76th birthday this week, and he's played it, you know, for a half a century at the highest level ever. But more importantly, he's a fine gentleman and a father and a grandfather and a great-great-grandfather. And it's all because of the game of golf. And I just encourage everybody to get involved with the game and call your local PGA golf professional at the golf courses, whether it's a municipal golf course or private golf course, and let he or she lead the way. Or log on to the Southern Texas PGA, talk to Kelly Gilley and the foundation, and I guarantee you your life will be richer if you get involved with the game of golf.
It certainly will. And the three of us had a little exchange this week. I put out there in honor of Tom Brady versus Peyton Manning, their 17th meeting. What a rivalry, great rivalry. What about golf rivalries throughout the years, throughout the decades? Who were some of the best? And the first one that I put up there was Nicklaus and Palmer. Kind of, I don't know if it changed the game, but it certainly did. It enhanced it, much like Tiger did, brought it to a new level. Obviously, Hogan and Nelson before that, and Bobby Jones. But how about some great golf rivalries throughout the years, guys? What comes to your mind?
Well, I'd have to go with Arnie and Jack, and I think that, you know, Jack almost won the Open at Cherry Hills that Arnold won. Jack finished second. And then Jack turned pro and playing in the Open at Oakmont, which is basically Arnold's home area, hometown, was paired with him the first two rounds, oddly enough, and then they tied, and then they went into a playoff. And I can't imagine that anybody was rooting for Jack Nicklaus that day, other than maybe his family, obviously, but in the gallery. And this young kid went into the King's Den, so to say, and drummed Arnold. And I think it, in many ways, changed the game forever. As far as Arnold, I don't think Arnold was really, he won some majors after that, but it was almost like the bully got punched a little bit. And Jack was quoted as saying years later, they asked him about the pressure of it, and he said, I didn't care who I was playing. I wanted to win the Open. And think about that at that age, to go into that arena and not care that it was Arnold, not care that it was at Oakmont, not care that it was in Pennsylvania, and have that kind of hyper-focus to say, I just wanted to win the U.S. Open. Didn't make any difference that it was Arnold Palmer. And I believe he meant it, because he played his whole career that way, with unbelievable tunnel vision, Jack Nicklaus. And I think we tend to forget really how great Jack Nicklaus was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was able to keep the emotion out of it. I mean, he gets a little emotional now at the age of 76. He, you know, he'll shed a tear every now and then because he's thinking of the past. But during his heyday, he was as unemotional as anybody out there. You know, they always, Jim Flick always said it was his German heritage that allowed him to think that way, more of a scientist, just like this young amateur. But when John asked, you know, put that question out this week, you know, I thought the rivalry was Tiger and the Tour. He took on everybody. I mean, they didn't care who it was, and he fought them all off. Ernie Els. I mean, you take all those guys that could have won some majors during his tenure when he won his 14 majors, nobody could beat him. I mean, his success rate was unbelievable, and television has really captured that that those moments very, very well. I mean, Arnold Palmer was the first guy to really show golf off on television, and then Jack and Arnie and then Tiger, and here we are today.
Yeah, no question about that. Yeah, you know, Phil has been the second best player of this generation, and the two of them really, there hasn't been that head-to-head. You know, the two of them going back and forth. It doesn't seem like much of a rivalry because Tiger was so dominant during this era. But Phil has had a wonderful, wonderful career, and it just doesn't seem like the two of them went head-to-head. You know, early on, I guess, Bobby Jones and Gene Sarazen, guys, was that, you know, it was obviously before all of our times, but was that legendary at the time?
Well, it would have been difficult because Bobby Jones was an amateur.
Right.
And Sarazen, obviously, a professional. So the only time they would have ever played would have been the U.S. Open and the British Open, and Bobby Jones made a lot of his accomplishments were also the U.S. amateur and the British amateur. But I think Charlie's Tiger against the tour is interesting because nobody ever really stood up to Tiger. Although Tiger told me one time that his biggest nemesis head to head was Vijay Singh, because Vijay at least gave off the scent that he cared a little bit less about people than almost Tiger did. So I think they were an interesting match because they both kind of played, don't you think, Charlie, with almost a little disdain for each other?
Oh, 100%. You know, there's a couple times where I was close to that pairing at a golf, you know, tournament up in Boston, and you could feel the not resentment, but I guess disdain would be a good word, and they wanted to beat each other's brains out. So, yeah, Vijay, he stood up to him, and he became number one during Tiger's reign. So, yes, I think that's a great example.
Yeah, the only guy, the guys who stood up to Tiger, Bob May, Rocco Mediate. I mean, it was there weren't many guys that could go head-to-head with him and didn't do it multiple times, just did it one time. To create great, great moments in golf during Tiger's reign over golf. We've got Billy and Charlie here, both in Palm Springs. Both their guys playing just great this week. And you talked a little bit, we talked a little bit about having different courses and whatnot. But Bill, Billy must love this. I mean, to be the defending champ, to be playing this well again here, I guess some courses just fit your eye, and he just feels so comfortable here?
You know, I think this is just an observation. I don't know this. But I think what Bill loves about the desert is you kind of get rewarded for the shot that you hit. There's not a whole lot of trickery out here. And the weather's so good that, you know, you're going to hit. If you hit a good shot, you're going to be rewarded. So you are literally playing in a dome. It'd be like the kicker, field goal kicker kicking inside. There's no elements other than you and the golf course. So if you hit a good shot, you're going to be rewarded. Golf is totally fair, let's say, out here in the desert. There's almost no chance for bad breaks.
Yeah, and I guess Anko's feeling that this week too, Charlie.
Yeah, we've had it. Like I said, he got out here, and each day, each hole he played, each shot he hit, he started to feel more comfortable, and you don't have the unfairness in a sense of high rough, you know, the wind, and it doesn't matter if you start off at 8 o'clock in the morning, at 10 o'clock. So, but the quality of shots, like Bill says, is really, and the environment is really fun to watch these guys play golf, and that's what it's all about. But the other thing, too, and over the years, I've watched Bill Haas and his friend, father, JB, with their friend Bill over at Toscano, and they have a great, great place to go practice, and it's just a great environment. And I think that's one of the reasons why Bill is so successful here.
Absolutely. All right, we got one segment to go on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity, inspiring business performance. Don't go anywhere.
listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour
featuring Bill Harmon
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Powered by Insperity.
Insperity, inspiring small business performance. Once again with the Golf Doctor, here's your host, John Granato.
This is our fourth and final segment here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity, inspiring business performance. We always try to learn a little something. And guys, maybe you guys can explain it. We were talking about Bryson DeChambeau, and one of the things when you Google him that comes up is the one plane swing. And there's a whole video of him, Bryson DeChambeau, the amateur U.S. amateur champ and the NCAA individual champ. There's a whole video of him in the one-plane swing. That's something that Jim Hardy had been talking about for years. Maybe you can explain a little bit. What is a one-plane? Bill, what's a one-plane swing?
Yeah, I don't know if his one-plane swing is the same as Jim's, but my understanding of a one-plane swing would be start with the arms and the shoulders moving on similar planes together. People that stand real tall tend to turn their shoulders a little flatter, and then their arms have to lift a little bit. That would be two planes. People that lean over a little bit more will have a steeper shoulder plane and a flatter arm swing, and that would be more of a one-plane swing. But I haven't seen this young man hit balls, so Charlie maybe could answer it better, but I think his technique is more like Mo Norman than it would be Jim Hardy, is it not, Charlie?
I would agree with that 99%. Got me so conscious of saying that now.
We love it, Charlie. Don't stop.
I've got a friend that I nicknamed Continental because he's got more swing planes than they have planes. I mean, but it's just something that you see more on video, that the club comes up and down relative to a person set up, like Billy says. If you're a tall guy, Jack Nicklaus, for example, had a very, you know, he had a right elbow that went high. John Daly, you know, that was his club went real high. Hogan had a real flat plane. It just depends how you stand. It's good to look at, but it all boils down, is the club face square at impact? It gives us a lot to talk about. Angel Cabrera's swing, it is on plane at the right hip coming into the ball, which is, I think, that's the most important thing. You know, we've had people with Jim Furyk's swing. His swing is really kind of discombobulated at times, but as the club approaches the golf ball, you know, 4 to 5, 6 feet, it's on plane and it makes solid contact relative to the direction you want the ball to go.
I was watching the Golf Channel. I couldn't hear it because I was in studio, but I was watching and they were looking at Phil's swing, and throughout the years how it's gotten more upright as opposed to being a flatter swing. Now Phil's always had great length. He's still got great length right out there. Is there some advantage to a flatter swing as opposed to a swing that seems to be more upright, Bill?
Well, I think in Phil's case, you'd come down to the ball on a pretty steep angle, excuse me, with a club face. I think it was kind of open. And at that point, he has to kind of save it with his hands. And Phil has probably got as good hand-eye coordination of anybody that's played professional golf. So he could at times save it and have great stretches of golf. But then he could also play very, very poorly. So I think in his case, if he shallowed things out, I guess is what he's trying to do, I think that would be a good thing for Phil.
And shallow would be more coming more from the inside, closer to the right elbow, closer to the right hip, and not coming steeply into the golf ball, I would think. But the fact of the matter is that it's okay to play poorly, because sometimes things just don't work out. And the worst thing you can do is change because you played poorly. Sometimes leave well enough alone and you won't get confused. And a lot of our amateurs, you know, they're always changing. Get something that works and stick with it long enough to prove it correct. Don't you think, Bill? I mean, we got to play a little more realistic. Golf is a game where you're going to have some bad days, but you don't always have to change.
Well, I agree with that, but most amateurs are poor players, and they're poor players because they have bad swings. So it's hard to compare the amateurs' poor play. Easy for us to tell Angel or Phil to don't change too much because they're a lot more gifted. But, you know, Charlie, if you have an amateur that has a real weak grip and a wide-open club face and is coming over the top, I don't know if he'll ever get better if he doesn't change. So, but I agree with you that poor golf is part of the package. But I think the amateur, if he wants to get better, he'll only get as good as his technique will take him.
It's
bottom out at some handicap, 15, 18, 20, whatever it is.
Well, and speaking of that, this week you mentioned it, Bill, a little while ago was Jason Duffner. And, you know, that waggle, love that waggle. And, he breaks his wrists and he's played really, really well. And when he's hot, and I guess is that a lot of a feel thing because he's such a feel player that he's going to play really, really well when he does, and then he's going to play poorly when he just doesn't have that feel?
No, I think he's got a very good swing, and he's worked a lot with Chuck Cook, and I don't know if he is. He appears to be a feel player, but he has very solid mechanics. I think for a quality of player as he is not naturally a good putter. It looks like he has to work really hard to putt good. So I think his putting will be the key here next couple of days. But Charlie's out there a little more than I, but Duffner doesn't necessarily look comfortable with the putter in his hand.
No, he's always missed some of those short ones, just like, a lot of the guys, those three-foot putts really drive you crazy. But he works at it, and that's what he's saying out here. He's playing well because he's been working hard.
All right, we're done. You guys, appreciate
Thank
it.
You
As
guys.
Always, have a great time out there in the desert. We'll talk again next week.